You all may be taking the week off, all right, this week, but I'm not.
Man, I'm 40.
The kids are playing their tail off, and the coaches are screwing it up.
You don't need to check your watch to know it.
Yeah.
Who's that?
Yeah, so it's going to be a slightly expedited one tonight because I actually have a real job that I have to do stuff for after we record this, believe it or not. So part of that real job means... is just, it's fun though. It's like meeting investors for drinks. So it's not like it's that hard. We just watch sports and talk about money.
You should have just hosted them. You should have just hosted them in your hotel room. And then they could have been on the podcast.
Do you think they could have given us a good Marshall JMU play?
You never know. There's some smart people out there.
Well like we were saying this week, Marshall's a really good program. They've beaten some good schools the last couple of years.
So is JMU.
Yeah, that's true.
Good track record. No, we'll
play Marshall next year.
Yeah, these people that I'm meeting would not expect to be able to contribute a whole lot. So
fair
in this world, but it's all good. It'll be a good time. So we got the week eight.
I think.
We got the week eight preview featuring Ohio State, Penn State. We'll spend the most time on that game. But first, Addison, as always, winners or losers?
Let's start losers just because I've got a main one here. So first one is Sparty. I mean, that was... that meltdown in the fourth quarter by them was classic Sparty. That was like John L. Smith style Sparty, the way they lost. They were up 24-6 in the fourth quarter. Their punter fumbled a snap, which resulted in a Rutgers touchdown. Then Rutgers got the ball back and scored. And then on the ensuing kickoff, the Michigan State guy just didn't field the ball and Rutgers recovered it and then scored to take the lead. So just a total fourth quarter meltdown for Sparty. Back to their old ways. Our Buffs, unfortunately, are on the loser list this week. Like probably a lot of people thought this game was well over at halftime, 29-0. And I was going to say somehow in the second half, but I think we know the reasons. Colorado could not stop that one dude for Stanford, the receiver. He had like almost 300 yards. Colorado also committed a million penalties. It was really sloppy after they went up big in the second half and then, of course, end up blowing it in overtime.
Addison, I was just remembering how the tide in that game started turning when the tide in our Catan game started turning against Carolyn, who was smoking us in the beginning. And then we kind of made a comeback there. But that's about when the tide in that Stanford game turned.
Yeah. Yeah. And let's see, just going down the list. That's probably all the losers I have.
Ooh.
So I'll let you guys jump in, make sure I don't have any others.
How about my number one loser is Tyler Van Dyke. Like, who are you really? You have like all the physical tools, throw a beautiful ball. He just does dumb shit. Tyler Van Dyke and the Canes are losers for me. Nick, the other loser I wanted to talk about was, how do we feel about Dan Lanning going forward on fourth down in that spot?
I'm okay with it. They just got to execute.
I didn't love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That one's a close one for me, yeah. I would say. But with that, like, I don't have a problem with him going for it, but I don't know. If he punted, I would have been fine too.
Yeah, that one's definitely closer. I don't think it's like a slam dunk. I just like staying aggressive. I don't want to give the ball back to Penix.
All right. Nick, close us out with losers and maybe transition to winners.
Boise State was up 31-10 with 4 minutes left against Colorado State, and they lost. So similar to Sparty's meltdown. And then
there were a bunch this weekend.
Yeah. And then winners, Houston, Hail Mary.
Yeah, great game.
Keon Coleman, he had a sick catch in the Syracuse game and had a big game again. Notre Dame defense against USC, they really made Caleb Williams look stupid. And Tolman, our Sandcats, Arizona, Fafita, they really need to keep playing him. They look great in a blowout win over the Cougs, who I don't know what's happened to them. That's a weird situation, too. I don't know how they went from looking as good as they have to just being dead all of a sudden. I don't know if there's injuries that we don't know about, but that's all I had for winners, though.
Yeah, the name of the Stanford receiver that's the winner of the week is Elik Iyomanor Addison. So there you go. Any other winners, Addison?
Yeah, I got a couple. Well, I mean, Nick already mentioned Notre Dame's defense, but very impressive what they did. Just making Caleb Williams look pretty bad. So that's the first time we really have seen that kind of performance from Williams. I had Penix as well. I mean, Penix is at this point a heavy favorite for the Heisman. Looking at the Heisman list, I kind of think it's interesting too right now. There's some guys who are undervalued, I would say. Jaden Daniels, I think, is, because there are a few guys ahead of him. He's 14-1. I was just gonna pull up
Brian from Sunbury had a guest question, but I knew we were trying to speed things along tonight. He was gonna ask about what Heisman candidate will we bet besides Penix. It's not like there have been guys in Penix's spot that have been just as big of faves, if not bigger, and have not even made it to New York at this point. Now, I think it's going to be hard for him not to make it, but I saw Bo Nix was 30-1. I mean, they have like a chance to still like win the conference and make the playoff. And I think that he's a little undervalued there, because I thought he played really well in the game. It's not his fault they lost.
That's another game, by the way, that's another game in the Texas-Oklahoma, the Red River Rivalry category that I'd like to see that
play out again.
I'd like to see it continue to play. I'd like to see the fifth quarter and sixth quarter in that game.
There's a good chance you'll get to see both of those.
I don't know.
He should put up a lot of numbers before the end of the year. Their schedule just looks worse and worse as the season goes on.
Is Marv 50-1 or worse?
75, and he is. I think that's a good bet. I was going to bring that up.
That's the one that Nick. I mean, I know it's a homer pick, but
I think he should be there. I think he should be ahead of McCord. I would give Marvin better odds of winning the Heisman than McCord. I mean, McCord hasn't been bad, but he hasn't been like Heisman caliber. Like if Marvin, had a big finish to the season and we go undefeated, then yeah, he could be right there. And at 75-1, I think it's a pretty good bet right now. I don't like JJ McCarthy at 9-1. So that's those are the second best odds after Michael Penix. He's tied with Jordan Travis and Gabriel. McCarthy, aside from just, I don't think he's that good. Michigan without him is in the exact same spot they already are this season. Like nothing, basically nothing changes. They've just like, he doesn't affect the team the way Michael Penix does. Like Penix carries that team.
McCarthy runs the system.
Yeah.
So there you go.
And like I said, Jaden Daniels also has a great opportunity still. He's definitely too low. I mean, I guess it's just because of two losses, but that definitely doesn't eliminate you at this point.
Yeah,
especially if they win out. If they win out, then he's got a great shot.
What about where's Dylan Gabriel in all of this? He's probably pretty high up there.
9-1, same as Travis and McCarthy.
I like, out of those three, I like Gabriel the best, just because
the best. Yeah, I agree.
Their schedule is so favorable. I mean,
yeah,
you can make an argument that. I mean, when we get to previewing Florida State Duke, I mean, this is like a kind of a Heisman swing moment for Jordan Travis, just because they're not going to play too many ranked teams moving forward. All right. Do we want to preview the feature game of the week, Penn State, Ohio State?
Yeah. So the line is, I think, currently 4.5, and the total has been destroyed down to 45.5, I believe. Supposed to be some rain in the forecast, but I mean, market clearly is expecting a rock fight. And that's what I grabbed an under on Sunday, expecting that as well. And I hate betting Ohio State games. I would bet a total. I wouldn't bet a side ever, I don't think. But we'll start with, I guess, when Penn State has the ball. You know, it's interesting. Like, they haven't really played anybody great this year yet. It's kind of similar to Michigan. We have their opponent adjusted EPA at 41st overall. The average defense that they faced is 70th this year. The best defense they faced was number 3, Iowa, which is certainly a formidable defense. Penn State averaged 4.1 yards per play in that game, so not great. It's interesting. Like, I guess the questions I have are, can they create enough explosives? Because I think it's unlikely that they can just kind of methodically move the chains like they have the whole year. I think there are other questions, like, is that by design? Like, did they know that they were going to comfortably win these games and save stuff for the OSU game? I'm not so sure about that. I don't know why in Aller's first huge road start you would just all of a sudden unleash stuff that you probably need to at least try out a little bit. I'm not sure if it's necessarily Aller, like, not being able to throw it down the field. He definitely has the arm for it. When I've dug into it, though, and we talked about this when we previewed the Penn State and the Big Ten pod earlier in the year in the offseason, that the receivers are not great. Lambert Smith is the only one that can create any kind of separation. He's only doing that when they face zone coverage. He's not really separating even in man. So I am curious if Burke is healthy or not, because I think that's a serious problem for Penn State then, because the other guys they have create no separation at any point. And you would think, you know, I think this running back room, we either had them first or second as far as, I mean, they're definitely a top 3 running back room in the nation coming into this. But when I've looked at it, like, their tape grades, their advanced metrics on Allen and Singleton, like, they have really not played that well this year. And the line also, as we were, like, really only one of the very few groups that pointed this out in the offseason, because everyone, all the talking heads and national platforms kept saying, like, oh, Penn State's going to have a great O-line. And Fashanu is the only one that's elite. He's a great player. But the other four are pretty average to below average at times. So, yeah, disclaimer, like, we are Ohio State fans, and it sounds like I'm just saying Penn State has no shot here. But the way that Ohio State's defense has played this year so far, I mean, the only times they really showed any kind of vulnerability was they got a little worn down in the second half against Notre Dame. If Penn State can, I mean, if they can pick up some first downs, if they do actually pick up a couple explosives, either in the pass game or run game, then, you know, we know that these teams in the biggest games, they really, at least Ohio State, they don't really sub out anybody on defense. So can you maybe wear them down a little bit? I think that's also dependent on if OSU cannot go 3-and-out as often, because I think on the other side, it's kind of a similar story for the most part, except when we get to that, obviously OSU has a little bit more explosive capability in them. But I don't know about you guys. I just, like, I don't really see like a clear path for Penn State to be really successful on offense in this game. I think in games like this, you got to have some guys that can make some plays down the field or like have some explosive runs. And they just don't seem like they don't have anybody that's proven to be able to do that yet this year. And that was against bad competition. Like this is, I think, going to be a little bit of a shock to their system facing somebody this good in this kind of environment. So, I think clear edge to Ohio State on that side of the ball.
I think what always happens in these kind of games, if an offense like Penn State is going to have some success against Ohio State, is like dumb stuff, is underthrown balls that turn into third and long conversions mm-hmm. because of pass interference, dumb targeting penalties, just like undisciplined stuff by Ohio State. Kind of can Franklin kind of put together a game plan that uses our hubris against ourselves? I feel like that's kind of what it takes.
Well, I think if Burke is out, that opens up an opportunity. Like if, because Igben Otson has not been great in coverage. We've pointed that out a couple times this year. He's the one guy in the back end that's been getting beat pretty often. And Lambert Smith is like a pretty good player. Is he Dotson? Is he Hamler? No, not at all. But he is good enough, I think, to take advantage of an average to below average corner. If he gets lined up on Matthews, who is a freshman, then
he
like
seems like a guy though.
Who?
Matthews seems like a guy.
Yeah, he does.
Me
but
and
Tolman, like,
me and Tolman were talking a lot about.
Liked
him last week.
He's,
I know
he's the guy. He's the guy that's like showing up on special teams. That's like a kind of an early tell.
I like Matthews. Like, I've heard all the practice reports, the same shit you guys have heard. It's also Penn State first game he'd be starting. So like, I'm not going to sit here and say he's just going to come in and just dice. If he does, I hope he does, then great. But Burke being, I think Burke is a pretty big deal. Like that really closes up all windows for Penn State. Cause I think what's going to happen is Knowles will likely mix up the looks as he's done most of this year. But if Ohio State, I mean, if they, I'm curious to see, like, if he says, you know, test us, because like they've actually been implementing more zone, like kind of shell stuff like Iowa this year, to where like, there was such an emphasis on preventing explosives this year. And they've done a complete 180 on it. That's what's made them very good. That if they let teams get down into the, you know, inside the 40 at all, they're shutting that down then. But I am a little curious to see if they say, we want to see if these receivers and Aller can beat us down the field. Like, do they really kind of like load up the box at times? Do they maybe press a little bit more in coverage? I'm not sure. Or do they just say, hey, try to beat us methodically. We trust that our offense can do more against your defense and we'll just shut you down when you get inside the 40. I don't know. I'm kind of curious to see what the exact plan is with that.
Okay.
Yeah, and Ohio State has given up very little down the field. I mean, even when you talk about like Igben
like
Osun,
nothing.
That's who teams would attack. He's still not, it's not like last year when we were giving up 80-yard touchdowns at the end of the year. So at least we have that going for us. One thing about our defense is we tend to start a little slow. We give up some yards early against Maryland. Obviously we gave up some points, but
Purdue.
we've tended to lock it down. Obviously when we get to the red zone, like we've been doing all year. You know, Aller so far, you know, for all the hype, and we talked about this too, like the hype seemed like kind of over the top. And right now, the thing that I will give him is that he's thrown no picks yet. So he's not turning the ball over. Aside from that, I wouldn't say he's like outplaying Sean Clifford at all. Really?
No, not at all.
Compared to last year. So
no. Yeah. Their offense last year was way better.
But the turnovers are, I mean, does Ohio State win last year? If not for the turnovers.
Well, and that's the thing I was going to say too, is that could be huge in this game. Cause, you know, there have been some times where obviously, you know, McCord gets hit, McCord fumbles, that kind of thing. Like we can't give up, you know, strip sets like that in this game, because that could be what kills us if that happens. You know, so the game could come down to that. Obviously, there are a lot of injury concerns for Ohio State too. As you mentioned already, the Burke injury. You've also got Igbuka and Travion Henderson. We probably won't know if those guys are going to play or not until like right before the game is what I'm expecting. So it's hard to say what to expect there, but I mean, you know, Penn State offensively, like their receivers, aside from Lambert Smith, have done nothing, absolutely nothing this year. It's either been him or the tight ends, really, or you get Singleton too, who can catch passes. But yeah, it's basically one guy you have to focus on from receivers.
I double checked on Aller. Like I agree. He's done a really good job of basically throwing no turnover worthy passes, but his average depth of target is 6.5 yards. That's not going to beat a defense like Ohio State. That's not going to work. They're going to have to push it a little bit.
Yeah. And like you were saying earlier, it's like they haven't had to make plays down the field. I mean, they've won pretty easy in all the games, but it definitely doesn't look like they're hiding anything, I would say.
I don't think so.
They're not running the ball as well. And like you wouldn't just play that way the entire season.
Right.
if you especially with a new quarterback, like you would actually want him to like be able to throw down the field before you go into a game like this. So I think it's gonna be a struggle for both teams offensively, especially if Ohio State has some guys out offensively, but I am very curious to see how much Dallin Hayden plays now. I really think he can help this team right now. And the fact that he hasn't played that much until last week actually could kind of help us, just because it's kind of a thing that is not on tape really that much. Like you've got a different, like, kind of running back now that could possibly be the guy. And I don't know, whenever he's in, he just seems to do well. He seems to have the best vision, hits the hole, you know, the fastest out of all the running backs, I would say. So I mean, it could kind of end up being a good thing for us.
Yeah, I mean, he might be a better fit behind what the current offensive line is. Like, there might be like Chip might be, he might be more talented. Trey's definitely the most explosive, most gifted athlete. But if the offensive linemen are going to have trouble getting to the next level, which they clearly do, you kind of want a guy that can find the hole quickly and just kind of get north and south and like have the vision to like find, like, it's hard to explain, but like, I mean, I played running back. Like sometimes the hole is not as big as like there can be little creases there. And like, if he's going to quickly find that, like you were saying, Addison, like he showed against Purdue that like, yeah, those guys open up some bigger holes in that game. It is Purdue. But you did see some signs of possible improvement and maybe he's a part of that. I think in this game, it's like you alluded to, Addison, I think it's pretty important that they have Igbuka and or Trey, only because if you are going to struggle to move the chains consistently, like I think it's going to play out a lot like the Notre Dame game, and they survived the Notre Dame game because they rolled coverage to Marv and Igbuka had to make a lot of plays. One-on-one, Stover had to make some plays. Like there's talent on obviously with Tate and Fleming, but Ibuka's like kind of like he and Stover are big when these teams try to like bracket Marv. Trey showed that when the run game's struggling, all it takes is one play. And that basically like was a huge factor in the game at that point. So yeah, I mean, I think if I would expect to see Hayden quite a bit after last week, I hope Trey can go, but I guess if I had to choose one of them, I would rather have Igbuka, because I think Hayden in the run game, it's going to be fine. As far as, it might not look great, but like I guess what I'm saying is like I don't think there's as much of a drop off from Trey to like Hayden than there is from like Igbuka to Tate at this point in his career. I think Igbuka is pretty key to giving us like maybe a slight edge at times there.
Yeah, yeah, and I think Igbuka could really be a big loss.
And he was big in the game last year.
Him and Marv complement each other really well. Yeah, and he's come up big a lot of times. I mean, I feel like Igbuka doesn't, like, from our own fan base, doesn't get as much love just because I don't think he's not as good as Marv. I don't think he's as good as Garrett Wilson or Olave or Smith and Jigba. A lot of the recent guys we've had, but he's still really good.
Yeah.
So, that would be a big loss for us if he can't go. I've talked about before, you know, I like, you know, when our offense struggles, I just like, you know, go for the home runs, you know, but you need time to throw to be able to make those throws. So the offensive line, if we're going to do that, they've got to play well in this game against the.
Yeah. And that's where I was going to go with it next is like, so let's get into, we kind of seamlessly transition to that side of the ball, but OSU is our 13th ranked offense coming into this game. Average defense they faced is 73rd. Their two best data points being Notre Dame and Maryland. They struggled up front with Notre Dame and with efficiency overall. They struggled with Maryland for about 2.5 quarters till they finally opened it up with the pass game and took over. I think obviously, Addison, you just mentioned it. Like, I think the matchup to watch on this side of the ball is, can the O-line handle the Penn State pass rush? Because Penn State's pass rush is elite. I think it's more elite on the outside with the ends compared to the guys in the middle, where Notre Dame, it was more the guys in the middle giving us problems, especially Heinzman, who cannot block. Hopefully he's not terrible on Saturday. But I it's interesting with Penn State because, yes, they are our first ranked opponent-adjusted defense. However, we've talked about this before on this podcast that sometimes halfway through the year, these metrics, even if they're opponent adjusted, it's still, there could be some noise in there as far as like the average offense Penn State has faced ranks 94th for us. The best offense was 61st ranked Illinois. I dug into their corners a little bit because I'm curious about how they would look with the pieces they lost from last year's team. Kalen King, he graded out as one of the best corners in the nation last year because teams weren't throwing at what's-his-face that got draft Porter. So they were throwing at King a lot, and he held up. He did great. Like, he did very well over the course of last year. This year so far is the guy guarding a lot of so far bad teams' number one receivers. He's been not good. He's actually been below average, which I was kind of surprised about. So I think what you might have been getting at, Addison, is like, yes, the O-line – they need to hold up better than in the Notre Dame game. They need to give McCord more time to actually find these guys down the field. If they can hold up just enough, I am a little curious to see how aggressive Day is in the beginning of this game with Marv, especially like, how good is your secondary, Penn State? Can we use the pass game to open up the run at all? We've talked about that a lot the last few weeks with OSU. So I think just watching Penn State eye test and looking at metrics, I do think this is a really good defense. We thought they would be an elite defense coming into the year. I mean, I think for me, I said this already, like, I think there are a lot of similarities on both sides of the ball in this game. I think what gives OSU an edge is just that when they need some explosives, they can actually pull it off, where I don't know if Penn State can do that. So there's also been obviously a history with James Franklin kind of coming up small in games like this and in big moments in games like this. You say what you want about Day, but he's had his fair share of victories against teams like this already. So I think there's still a little bit of an edge there with the staff, I would say. And that's the other thing too, is I'm really curious to see how much pressure and simulated pressure that Diaz brings on McCord. I'm curious to see how McCord holds up against that, because I think Notre Dame has proven they are a very good defense. I think they had a very good game plan. I think they got in his face a lot. I think he was having obviously an inconsistent night, and then he came up pretty big in the last drive. But I am curious to see like how much he's grown since that game, and if he can burn that blitz scheme of Manny a little bit, because he's the kind of guy that, like, even if maybe you shouldn't blitz as much against a team that has a bunch of guys that can take it to the house on a slant or something, he's stubborn and he's going to still do it. And he even mentioned, we saw that little clip of that presser or that little Zoom call he had a few weeks ago where he was like, yeah, he basically was saying like, I'm going to test that quarterback to see if he can handle it or not. So I think you're going to see a lot of 5 and 6 man type of blitzes or whatnot pressures coming at McCord on Saturday.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Ohio State offensively in general will have more success than Penn State. But the flip side of that is Penn State's defense creates a lot of havoc as well. Like I was saying, we got to avoid turnovers. Like Penn State's created a lot of them this year. That I think they're forcing like more than 2 a game, and they're also like at the top of the country in sacks per game. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean there's a lot of opportunity to throw the game away if you make mistakes. That's the thing offensively. Yeah. We have to guard against that. Another question I have for this game is, Ohio State gets to the red zone, who is quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of surprised they showed that look last week when they didn't need it. I like it because I think it gives another wrinkle in the run game. It obviously was successful until Brown puked the ball away, but I think also the problem that I have with it, like in 15, is you're bringing in a cold quarterback, one who, from all the practice reports, has a tendency to throw a lot of turnover-worthy balls and into the most congested and contested area of the field when he hasn't been in rhythm. Like, I'm not saying, like, I would be very surprised. In Day's history in this game and in bigger Big Ten games is to play it pretty conservative. So I think you're going to see Brown in the red area. I would be shocked if he throws a pass, to be honest. Like, a pass that's like, because the one pass he threw was outside the numbers, terrible. And it could have been pick six. Yeah.
He did throw a touchdown later when he was just in garbage time. But
right.
And
right.
that was a nice throw. But yeah, as far as the red zone goes, when like, you know, the game was still like
right
relatively on the line.
So like, could you see, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I think if they need specifically 2 yards or less, I do think you're going to see that because I think, again, it's kind of Day getting into his head being like, we need to be able to be better in these short yard situations. And this is an Urban thing. This is you, mm-hmm. you add an extra blocker, essentially, make the defense account for the quarterback. So I think it's fine, but I think it is a little predictable and we don't have the greatest offensive line and that makes it kind of tricky. So I don't know what Tolman thinks, but I would be surprised if you don't see Brown, to be honest. In the red area.
I'll go the other way. I'll say you show it all last week. Why do you show it against Purdue? If you're going to show it, why do you show it against Purdue?
You think they just want to give them something to practice against?
Yeah. Make them spend time on it this week and don't use it at all.
Yeah.
That's what I would.
Yeah. That's possible.
That's
I mean,
that I would do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, whether or not we do that, I like the Tolman strategy. Just, you know, you're playing Purdue. You want to test something out, you know, that could help in short yardage or the red zone where you've struggled. Make Penn State think about it. And then, you know, whether or not you use it in this game, maybe it's at least like it's showing that Day is like thinking later about trying to fix that problem. And it's something that, you know, you could develop over the course of the season. I mean, after Wisconsin, we have like 3 tune-up games for Michigan, really. And just, yeah, at least he's trying some. Plus, I against the or in the Maryland game, I literally texted you guys. I was like, McCord was playing bad in the first half, and I was like, bench him and put in Devin Brown and just run zone read. And that's what we did in the red zone last week. And you know, it worked well. And you know, the fumble was like an inch away from being a touchdown too. I mean, you got to hold on the ball anyway, but there was, I'm intrigued by the possibilities there.
Okay. The only point that was missed was Ohio State handling Penn State's pressure is not just about the offensive line blocking well. It needs to be said that Kyle McCord needs to be better at stepping up in the pocket. Part of it is part of the concern. He's got to be better there. So otherwise,
There's been a couple times also I've noticed the last 2 games where
he likes to throw off his back foot.
Yeah, and like the way he moves, this is hard to describe. Like the way he moves within the pocket is kind of careless, I think. Also, like you can't do that against these athletes. Like they have three guys that are going to track him down that Purdue and Maryland didn't have. So I really think Addison brought up a good point as far as like you guys, your points combined at least, where I think the ball needs to get out pretty quick this game. I want to take some shots down the field, but I really think the game plan needs to be to try to get the ball out quick, get it to playmakers in space, hopefully, and then take your shots when they're there, maybe in play action. But and if Trey plays, like, for God's sakes, can we get him the ball in the pass game?
Yeah,
like, especially the team.
Yeah,
that,
we definitely should.
With a team that blitzes as much as they might, like they might be alluding to, like, you can burn them hard with that. Like, he burned them, I believe, was it last year? I think he's gotten them before in the past game, but he's gotten a couple teams like that. So
yeah,
I'm curious to see if he's healthy and playing.
I would say, especially if you're worried about having zero success just on like standard downs in the running game, and you have a depleted running back room, I would go the bubble screen flat routes as an extension of the running game here.
Yeah. And you'll probably see Xavier Johnson, I would say, getting some touches in the backfield too, again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Especially if that's if Trey's out. If Trey's in, though, it's going to be Trey and probably Hayden.
Well, yeah, Johnson's probably going to play a lot just because Igbuka and Henderson are both questionable. So
yeah, and OSU's tricky, though, too. Like, we think we know based on what we've seen, but like last year, for example, in the Michigan game, we didn't have a fucking clue that Chip was going to be playing, and then he ran for like 100-something yards or whatever. So, like, it's always tricky with OSU because they're pretty tight-lipped about this stuff. It's even locally with the people we might know, like it's hard to get the most like valid information, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
Okay. Last thing, and we have to move on. Of note, one of Penn State's analysts, he was the high school coach of Kyle McCord and Marvin Harrison at St. Joe's in Philly. So they got someone on their staff that knows those kids pretty well.
Fair.
Otherwise,
interesting nugget.
I think we did that game justice. Might have been the longest that we've ever done on a single game. So these quick hitters got to be more on the quick side.
Sure.
Addison, I'm giving you the first one because they've given you Christmas on Saturday at 3:30. There are three Big Ten West games on at the same time. Cross divisional matchups.
Yep. I was going to talk about the Big Ten West, obviously.
Yeah, just go. Give us some quick stuff on all three.
Minnesota, Iowa. I mean, the total is down to like 30.5 now. We're in the possibility of having like the lowest total ever. I honestly like Iowa in this game -3.5. Like, I think they can win comfortably against Minnesota. Minnesota's not a good team. Callie McManus is probably going to turn the ball over. It's what you think it's going to be. Minnesota is really going to struggle to score. Could gift Iowa some points with turnovers. And Iowa, you know, their offense is terrible, but the last couple games they've been able to pop some big runs for touchdowns, which is a really big deal for them. You know, it kind of can swing these kind of things, and you know, when they're a kind of a short dog or a short fave.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so why is Nebraska favored by double digits against any Big Ten West team?
They shouldn't be, but
that's a good question. Yeah,
I lean Northwestern pretty hard, but I didn't feel quite comfortable with the fact that Nebraska was laying double digits. It kind of scared me off of it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, my instinct would be to take Northwestern, but I don't know. Maybe mid-season Matt Rhule starts to get something going with Nebraska. I mean, are they off a bye? I don't think they played last week, did they? They are off a bye. They won their last game. Yeah. Maybe they actually start playing, you know, more up to their potential.
Yeah.
And then the Wisconsin-Illinois line is a little stinky, but maybe the books are just, and maybe what we're learning is Wisconsin just is not that good.
I think
it's the Bielema Bowl.
Yeah, Bielema hates Wisconsin, and obviously Mordecai was ruled out, and he wasn't good, but the guy behind him is a lot worse. So that line got smashed through three. It's basically Illinois or pass. Like, there's, I don't really know if there's going to be a lot of buyback on Wisconsin.
Okay. Addison, any, I feel like this is a spot where you would take Sparty plus the 24. Anybody thinking Sparty this week?
I leaned it. I don't love it, but I leaned it.
Okay.
Normally, yes, but I don't know. I don't like it. I don't like it this week. Michigan's just been like crushing these teams. So I'm going to stay away from it.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know how Sparty scores. That's the problem.
Okay. Let's get out of the Big Ten. Another game of interest is physical Utah with a uncertain quarterback situation continuing against pillow soft USC. They're getting 7 points on the road. I don't know. Did you guys see anything from USC last week that tells you they should be favored by these good by seven over these good Pac-12 teams?
I don't like it at seven. I joked earlier, and I think it was Sunday, I joked, I think I'm going to have to take SC, and I kind of wish I would have at four. This raced out to seven within a couple days. I think it's partly because USC's defense, we've talked about it endlessly. Everybody that would ever listen to this podcast understands how their defense is not good. But Utah's offense has been horrible. Utah's offense has been almost as bad as Iowa's this year. Cam Rising is not playing again. I don't know if he's going to play this year, to be honest, at this point. But they went back to Barnes. They actually looked better in the run game against Cal. This is the first time they actually look kind of competent in the run game. If they can carry that over, shorten the game, keep the ball out of Williams' hands. Because Williams and the offense looked so out of sorts and so bad last week. Riley, a couple times, I've seen clips on Twitter where, like, it's almost like he's kind of saying, like, I don't know if I'd call it, like, calling them out. But, like, it feels like if you're going to actually have the season that you wanted to have this year, you need to be buttoned up and have this game. So, I still would lean SC, to be honest, but I don't love that at all at seven. Utah beat their ass twice last year. I don't think this is at all the same Utah team, but I just question if USC is completely bought into this season. Like, their best player kind of seems like not quite in it, and maybe he's there for his own personal reasons, and I don't love that. So I don't know. I'm not in love with how that program's kind of trending as far as just this season. And that's why I'm off of that. But I don't trust, like, I just don't know if Utah can keep up with them if they are, like, ready to go in this game.
Yeah. That's the thing I'm most worried about is, can Utah score enough points? I mean, their defense has been really good, but
yeah,
I think they're going to, like, even against USC's defense, which is not as bad as last year, but
yeah,
still not great. So Utah might be able to find something there, but they're not going to be, you know, explosive, I would say. And USC, I think, will get their points for the most part. So
yeah, we have Utah as our 120th ranked offense. SC, we actually have at 61. I mean, they've been not great, but I think it's a team like Utah, they can look decent.
Is this an under game? Because if we're thinking,
if
regardless of what USC does, they get their 38. But what if Utah just can't? What if USC's defense what if Utah's offense is so bad they just can't score?
I think if that's the case, I would be more comfortable taking SC. Because that just means that SC is just going to be like, they're not going to, I don't think it's going to look like it did against Notre Dame. Exactly.
Conversely, if the game is close, you'd think it's because Utah is playing ball control, kind of keep away.
Right.
I would think there's a couple scenarios there where you would tend to think under actually in this game.
Yep.
Okay. Addison, do you want Alabama, Tennessee, or Florida State, Duke? I think those are the last two we have left. Care about either of those?
Alabama, Tennessee. For the for the spread, I'm not sure. For the total, I would go under. Now, this is another game where I think Tennessee is going to have a lot of trouble scoring here. I mean, they can run the ball pretty well this year, but Milton, you know, we talked about him. You know, again, another quarterback where there was a lot of hype going into the season, but we weren't sure if he was going to live up to that. He has not at all. Alabama's defense is, I mean, I'd say kind of quietly, you know, been really good this year. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, from what I've seen from them and the way Tennessee has been playing offense, like they really struggled last week against A&M. And I think it's going to be more of the same offensively. They had a punt return for a touchdown that kind of gave them the margin of victory there last week. So, I mean, without that, it was going to be, you know, hard for them to win. So, yeah, it feels like an under game to me.
Yeah, I lean under so hard that I forgot to check today if it was 48 or higher. I was gonna bet under. Because on the other side, Alabama. I mean, Tennessee's defense has actually been good. Like it's been for us. Like I'm actually gonna. I want to look at this real quick because we have Tennessee as this would be going to this year. You would never think this, but so we have Alabama as our 14th best defense right now. We have Tennessee as at 11. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've been really good. If you would have told me Tennessee's defense would have been this good, I would have told you they would have won the SEC maybe. But the offense has been so putrid, like mainly throwing it, as Addison alluded to, that this game has kind of underwritten all over it for me. Like, I think that Alabama's just going to kind of – the only thing that worries me a little bit is Milton, like, giving the ball to Alabama possibly. But banking on turnovers, unless it's an Iowa game, is kind of like – not really something you should do in the handicap. So yeah, I definitely lean under. As far as against the spread, I would lean Alabama, but I don't love it at 9 because if you get kind of bad Milroe, if Tennessee kind of stifles the running game a little bit, I think it's gonna be hard for Alabama to get out to that kind of lead and cover that.
What's funny about this one too is when's the last time you could look at this matchup and be like, oh, I'm really worried about the Alabama offensive line going up against Tennessee's pass rush.
Right. Right. Because like, it's crazy. Last year, the game had like what, almost like it had like 90 points or something.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. So
I'll give you the answer. Philip Fulmer versus Mike Shula. Is that?
Yeah. Probably.
Yeah.
There's your answer.
But yeah, Tennessee is, you know, getting to the quarterback this year, and Bama is like near the bottom of the country in, you know, in sacks allowed. So
yeah, that Pierce. And
we've talked about how their offensive line isn't good, but yeah, Tennessee. That's another thing defensively that they've been really good at this year.
Yeah.
Okay. Score prediction. Official score prediction. Alabama 20, Tennessee 14.
That works.
Okay.
Yep. That's. I mean, under. There you go.
Yeah. Okay. Florida State has not looked great, but they're 14.5-point favorites over Duke. Nick, is Florida State on upset alert here, or is Duke just kind of a bit of a pretender and not going to be in this
game? I don't think Florida State is on upset alert at all, actually. I think that you could argue it maybe if we knew Leonard was definitely healthy and playing, but if he does play, I his legs are such a big part of what he does that I just think he's going to be too – I don't think he's a good enough passer to just beat them. And like, their pass rush is so ferocious as well that, like, him – like, thinking about him trying to escape that and make plays, like, it's just – I think it's a little too much to overcome. I like Duke's corners. I think the defense is – it's obviously Elko does a great job with scheme, but Florida State just honestly has more talent. Johnny Wilson's back this week, I believe. There's a reason that it dipped past 14 to 13 and a half, and then it ripped back to 14 and a half. Like, even if Leonard plays, it's like just not a great spot. So I actually, in a spot where you would think that like Duke should probably get the money, I kind of lean Florida State, to be honest.
Yeah, that's the thing about this game, is like not knowing if Leonard is playing makes it really hard to, you know, make an assessment here. The backup for Duke, like that dude, like he's a running back playing quarterback, basically.
Yeah.
Like he threw, like he went 4 of 12 passing last week, and they still they still won the game easily, but yeah.
Yeah. For our quarterback room for them, I have that as a full touchdown downgrade. I think it's one of the bigger ones I have of all the P5 schools. Like he's, like you said, Addison, he's not like a real quarterback.
Yeah.
Not at all.
All right. Did we miss any quick hitters? I don't think.
I mean, the only other one that you like could mention is Clemson, Miami, but I think there real quick, like Clemson's off a bye. Miami, we don't know what we're going to get with them. Van Dyke is, I think, banged up.
Give up factor.
Yeah. So we don't really need to probably cover that unless somebody has a bet or anything. I don't. So yeah.
Miami's too focused on NIL.
Maybe.
All right. Let's get the best bets and whale package, because I have not had a lot of time to prep this week. So Nick, you might have to sell me a couple bets, and then maybe I'll do a little, I think I might be doing the no scope headshot this week. So
well,
for us,
the problem. So this isn't, it's kind of anything that I would give, I wouldn't give at the current number.
Okay.
I took, so the only thing I would say is, I think we all seem to be in agreement that Alabama Tennessee under is probably one. The thing is, I don't really love it though if it's at 47 or 47 and a half. I think I would like to see a 48 somewhere.
47 and a half is all I'm finding. So
I might put something extra up on Twitter, like a couple leans I have if like people like it, but this is the first week where like I caught stuff early, and I don't like, I had a bunch of leans, but I don't love anything. I guess the one thing I can mention that would be available, I took a interesting one where Addison talked about this earlier, where like Minnesota got a lot of sharp money this week from 5 down to 3.5. I think that this is just a spot where like PJ never has beaten Ferentz. And I'm with Addison, where I think that as bad as Iowa's offense is, I feel like they're going to turn over Calicamanis as soon as Minnesota even tries to attempt a pass. I took Iowa win margin 1 to 13 points at +160, because I don't think they have the offense to beat Minnesota by more than 13. And the total is down to 30.5 now. Like the market's clearly saying like this is going to be a really ugly, low scoring, tight game. And in a spot where Iowa historically has been really good as a short fave, especially when they're playing PJ in Minnesota, I thought there was some value there. I think I think at +160, like that's a pretty common result that they win that game within that margin.
I like that bet.
Yeah. Iowa could score 20 points and cover. Iowa could score 20 points and cover easily, I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
I came up with
two no scope headshots.
Okay.
Give me the South Carolina Missouri game over 59.
Yeah, that's actually, so that's one that if that's what it's at, that's one 50. I can give, because I took them 58.5. I think that's fine actually up through 60.
59. Give me that. And should I do Army plus 32.5 is a weird number. Like you don't just blow out service.
I thought about that.
Hey, you take Jalen Daniels out after the first half and
right. Get out of there healthy.
Go vanilla. So maybe that's another one.
Yeah, I thought about that because like obviously they're gonna limit LSU's possessions. LSU's so undisciplined on defense that maybe they like if you can just get like, I don't know, 14 out of Army, I think you're probably good, just given the fact that they're going to bleed the shit out of the clock. I think their starting quarterback might be out, though. I don't know how much of a difference it is from that guy to the next guy, but
probably not.
It's still triple option.
Who is their number one quarterback?
I don't know. How the hell would I know? Yeah.
The point I'm making is, if you don't know who it is, then it's not a point differential. It's just
right.
If you don't know who it is, who either guy is, then it's nothing. It's meaningless.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting one. It's a lot of points to cover against an option team.
Addison, close us out. What do you got?
All right, I'll go out west here for a couple. Late night. I mean, I like the slate Saturday night Pac-12. These are 10:30 games.
I do too, yeah.
Washington, Arizona State. I'll take Arizona State plus 26.5. Washington is coming off of one of their biggest wins ever, really. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It just – after that, it just feels like a spot to go against them. So I'm going to go Arizona State. It's a lot of points as well.
You're with me then, Addison, because yep. I took Arizona State on Tuesday. So yeah.
The other game, UCLA Stanford, UCLA minus 17. I'm going to go Stanford here just because that just seems like too many points for UCLA to be giving anyone right now. And Dante Moore throws a lot of pick sixes. We yeah. got to say that at this point. Yeah, yep. that's been an issue.
Freshman. It's okay. Yep. All right. I think we covered everything.
Do we have official OSU Penn State scores real quick?
49-0 Ohio State.
Oh yeah, you did say that earlier in the week. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I already mentioned under. I'm going to say, if I had to go either way, I would say we cover. I feel like a lot of people have been like, they picked Penn State over us in the preseason, you know, and they are expecting their offense to be better because of Aller. And we have seen so far that it really hasn't been. And they're just committed to it at this point, is kind of my feel there. And yeah. also Ohio State at home, only giving 4.5. That is a rare opportunity to take Ohio State.
Yeah, depressed, you know, price
not,
for sure.
Not yes. Yeah, you can't get much better than that.
Yeah. I like 24-13. I think Penn State's offense is really going to struggle.
Cool. All right. I think we did it. We'll be back next week with a not as expedient episode. Good night, everybody.
High against the world.